Good morning and welcome to another episode of 42 Minutes. I'm Doug and joined by Will as normal. Today is Tuesday, September 4th, and today we are talking to Frank Albo, scholar and author of 2007's Hermetic Code. Hey, Will, how are you doing today?
So far, so good. I'm pretty excited to tell you the truth. But I really would have to ask Frank Albo to tell us a little bit about himself, though, so everybody knows exactly a little bit clearer what his expertise is.
Oh, is this where I jump in?
Oh, yes, please. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, my name is Frank Albo. I'm a historian of architecture, the history of religion, history of art, and Western esotericism. It sounds like a mouthful, but this is what I've spent the last 15 years in university doing. A recent graduate from Cambridge University, where I wrote my PhD in the history of Freemasonry in relation to architecture, in particular the Gothic Revival. All of which was inspired about 10 years ago by a curious glance at a very prominent local building in Winnipeg, where the laws of the province are enacted, the Manitoba Legislative Building, which had obsessed me for, as I mentioned, better part of a decade. And what I was interested in doing after I completed this body of work is to find out the genesis of ideas that had permeated the building's design. That took me to Cambridge and to several conferences in Europe where I looked at how Freemasonry, which is mostly largely maligned by based on faulty net research, I think Freemasonry is the best thing since sliced bread or anything like that, but they were instrumental in the area of architectural design. So I was interested in how Freemasons actually built buildings and what was involved in those elements. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Well, see, I've also noticed that I've heard quite a few interviews with you talking about what I guess the locals call the peg leg or the Winnipeg legislature. But
the peg leg. That's a new one. All right. I like
but,
it.
Peg, is that incorrect? Am I saying that wrong? Or?
Well, I think more accurately we call it the ledge. But,
the ledge.
Peg
the ledge.
Leg is good. I like peg leg better.
I've also seen this video where you broke down the whole layout of the city in its entirety and how its history goes back to being structured after the Garden of Eden, is that correct?
Okay. I think you're talking about the 10-20-20 talk, which
right.
Basically I was constrained to 6 minutes and 40 seconds to, I think, engage an idea. And the particular idea that I was interested in, which I think actually has a great deal to do with the promise of Winnipeg about a century ago, was tracing... which basically begins at the Garden of Eden. Now we can discuss some of that, and there are other cities that occupy the same element, but Winnipeg is a very unique case on that front. So yeah, that we can discuss the highlights
well,
of that. If
I'm,
you like.
I'm just wondering if the design goes past the initial building. I mean, have you discovered that?
Right.
The whole structure of the city was pretty much planned to have the same effect?
Okay, no, not exactly. What we have in Winnipeg began initially with what we describe as Memorial Boulevard or the Mall. Now, the Mall is this great causeway that terminates with the Manitoba Legislative Building, and its current state is largely a very pale reflection of its intended glory. Now, in order to properly understand that and contextualize that, you need to look at the early history of Winnipeg circa 1910 when the Manitoba Legislative Building was being built. Now, during that time, Winnipeg was the fastest growing city in North America, full stop. The real estate value of property in and around the center part of Winnipeg, where the Manitoba Legislative Building was built, was comparable to the same value of property per square footage in Manhattan or Chicago. So Winnipeg kind of emerges on the scene as a kind of Bethlehem of cities, the least among cities, but one with this extraordinary promise because of several factors. Number one, it was geographically the near center of North America. And at that time, the promised prosperity of Canada was determined by the grain, which would be distributed via rail systems to all parts of North America. Now, Winnipeg, being centrally located, went to all parts of North America through these railway lines that emanated from the very center. What that did is that created this humongous spike of speculation, not only in terms of real estate, but also in terms of immigration, because the government of Canada was issuing pretty much to the Commonwealth of the world that the most fertile soil anywhere on earth was in and around Winnipeg, in particular Manitoba. So what happened was an enormous influx of people moved to Winnipeg, and a city that was initially 1,500 people in, say, the 1890s had ballooned rapidly to 150,000 in a decade. What this means is that we needed to create a new city. How could we possibly support this extraordinary influx of population? And so at that time, there was something called the City Beautiful Movement. Have you ever heard of that? It was birthed in America. It's part of the American classical Renaissance. It was the same group of people that had inspired the design of Washington, D.C. and New York Central Park. And the notion is,
I don't believe that I have heard of it, but there is a lot of somebody once told me that some of the architecture and the Lincoln Memorial relates to some of the stuff that's going on in Winnipeg too. So there's a relationship. Absolutely. It's all the same project is what you're saying, basically.
Well, yeah. So what they, in order to really understand how Winnipeg emerges from this swampy, muddy waters, which is what actually the name of Winnipeg means.
That's funny. Go ahead.
Which I presume if you've talked to Jim and Jake, they would have probably related this to the primordial mound of Nun in ancient Egyptian cosmology, where it was out of the ground of Nun emerges this, out of the swampy lands, this primordial waters emerges this mound, which I think in private discussions with both of them, we equated with the oldest piece of rock on earth, the Canadian Shield, where Manitouape and the sacred sites of the First Nations people of Canada have built these various petroforms, which to this day have not been properly interpreted. Now, there are two facets to this, and very much like Freemasonry, you have the legendary side of Freemasonry, of which is highly speculative and also extremely interesting, and then the historical aspect of Freemasonry. Winnipeg shares in that, imbibes in that same milieu, where you have this kind of legendary element of history, which ties into Guy Madden's film, which ties into the fact that Winnipeg was the center of this extraordinary cosmological battle between the forces of Satan and the forces of the Archangel Michael in the 1950s. We could discuss at some point. And then the history of of Winnipeg, which to me is rivals them all, because it does have and shows the genesis of something that's extraordinary that happens from time to time in world history, where an enormous amount of energy, resources, and hope and promise is poured into a place. And at that time, it was 1910 Winnipeg, where they thought, we are going to build a beautiful capital city that is going to stand as a beacon to the world. And the people that represented the City Beautiful movement, who entirely revitalized Washington, D.C., which was pretty much a dung heap in 1910, and they turned into the great, you know, city of promise that it is today, with these extraordinary classical buildings and perfectly formed mall and the obelisks and of course the memorial buildings that had initially been planted, that seed had also been planted in Winnipeg. And so the mall of Winnipeg which presently there's only one reflection of that original mall, which is the cenotaph, the obelisk in the very center of the mall, and then crowned with the Manitoba Legislative Building, is that that original plan was supposed to rival the mall in D.C. And there were supposed to be classical buildings on either side, a national cathedral, a new city hall, and all of this was going to be in the center of Winnipeg as a kind of new Washington, D.C. Now, the people that built that had believed in this kind of historical epoch of the past. Architecture not only matters, but it can actually reform the soul. Architecture, among all other disciplines of human mind, has this ability to change the way you morally, ethically, spiritually operate. That's why it's so monolithic. And so if we build these buildings that are not only inspired by a grand design, but encoded with particular principles of beauty, of craftsmanship, and whatnot, we could make people civically virtuous. And that was the intent. Now, the only element that was completed of that original plan was the Manitoba Legislative Building. Now, for our purposes, what makes that so exciting is that inside this one building, think of it like an architectural fractal, is a repository of world sacred knowledge. We were very fortunate in getting the Michelangelo of 19th century Freemasonry, i.e. Frank Worthington Simon, the British architect who built the Manitoba Legislative Building and poured his mind and intent into it, that he left us these extraordinary clues that he hoped and challenged Manitobans to figure out, that it was at a time and context that Winnipeg was supposed to be this great metropolis. They expected 4.5 million people to be living here by 1984 based on the growth rate. And so what better place to signify a new temple of democracy than right in the heart of the new world, North America? So all of those things are mixed in to not only the early legislatures, but the people that moved here and many other things. That is just one facet of Winnipeg's early history that tries to tap into a ancient sacred past.
Okay, there's a few things that I want to remember. I want to remember the Archangel Michael. I also want to remember about the indigenous aspect. But I want to really ask you if you feel that Winnipeg has lived up to its expectations as far as its growth as a city and things of that nature. I mean, has what these individuals expected out of the city happened?
God, no. Not at all.
God, no. That's funny. What do you think the reason for that is?
Okay, there are okay. Now, what do you want to do? You want to do the history or shall we talk about the mysterious legend, which can also have a great imposition on our discussion, and I presume for your listeners, and it would be more interesting.
Let's go with the legend.
So, did Winnipeg live up to its glory? I think not. However, that dream is, I think, still alive, although masked in a great deal of secular apathy, but that's another matter. Now, what gestated in the heart of this city, like right from the beginning, was that it had a purpose. There was some, and this is rare in terms of cities, in terms of having a kind of indigenous ethos, and I don't mean an indigenous ethos as in the First Nations people that were here, but the city itself had from its early beginning a kind of voice of its own, and this voice was something that was it's kind of challenged now in the sense that it's like a lion that is caged. So one of the things that might have happened to subvert these plans at a secular level, it was the Panama Canal, which opened up a whole new series of resources that no longer relied on the rail. Secondly, the speculation had plummeted, and all of this great architecture that poured into the city, for instance, it just factored this in, is that the largest concentration of historic buildings in the world are in Winnipeg, that per capita. So there's this one area of Winnipeg called the Exchange District, and in that there are about 160 historic buildings, national significant historic buildings. And so that's more than Vienna, for instance, or more than Oxford University. Extraordinary compilation of historic buildings. The first skyscraper, the first steel-framed building in Canada, the first building to be built in Canada by McKim, Mead & White, the same people that built Grand Central Station, built our railway station. It was the giant of the kind of American enterprising engine had really looked to Winnipeg is thinking great things were going to happen. Now, at a kind of more psychic level, there were other things going on. For instance, you had a very early MLA named Thomas Glendinning Hamilton. Have you ever come across him in your Winnipeg?
Hamilton, no, sir.
Okay. Thomas Glendinning Hamilton was the last of the Mohicans on this front. Have you ever heard, do you know what spiritualism is?
Yes, sir. I actually understand that there is some spiritualism. I believe there was a seance in the ledge and things of that nature. And I know it was really big up in Canada at around that time, 1920s, 1930s, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it started in the U.S. with two girls, the Fox sisters, that basically brought to life this whole notion that was, I don't want to thoroughly contextualize it, but spiritualism was the idea that people could have their individual relationship with the divine, in particular their departed loved ones, by simply holding vigils and seances. And what this did was, is it broke the cabal of having organized religion be your interlocutor with the heavenly realms. But each person can individually have a relationship with the other side. And so there were table wrapping sessions, and seances were so popular, I mean, extraordinarily popular, that there were psychic societies that studied it as if it was some scientific phenomenon. You could actually test and put in test tubes things like ectoplasm, and you had photographic evidence and whatever. Now, in the U.S. and all over the world, in fact, this began to wane, but it's resurrected powerfully in Winnipeg in the early 1920 by this medical doctor who wrote for the British Medical Association name and who is also a member of parliament, Thomas Glendinning Hamilton, who's left the largest compilation of psychical material, I think, on the globe. And so he spent about 20 years of his life trying to scientifically and demonstrably show that you can communicate with the other side, and this other side is tappable. And so people like our prime minister at the time came to see him. Sherlock Holmes left Winnipeg after having seances with Thomas Glendinning Hamilton, and he said of all the places that he'd ever been, Winnipeg. I mean, and this is somebody who actually went to see the inscriptions of Thutmose IV on the chest of the Sphinx at the Giza Plateau, and wrote a three-volume history of spiritualism, and of course the great works of Sherlock Holmes. He said of all the places he'd ever been, Winnipeg was the most psychically active. So there was very early on this idea that Winnipeg was a kind of nexus of spiritual activity. You have also at the same time the International Brotherhood of Magicians, which is founded in the Exchange area, which I told you about with that largest concentration of historic buildings, which yes, is sir. Now the largest Brotherhood of Magicians on Earth. It's the International Brotherhood of Magicians. You can look them up. So very early on, during this period, this time when Winnipeg is beginning to decline, you have this renaissance of hotbed of spiritual seances and activity.
So now, in that aspect, it did live up to its expectation, like the increase of this spiritual power that they embedded into the city did carry through as far as after this was all constructed. But really and truly, like, the stability economically of the city did not.
Right. Okay. That is a valid point. But what I was hoping to illustrate is something else. See, now that we've already taken the blue pill or whatever it is. Right?
Okay.
When you're dealing with psychical phenomenon and disincarnate spirits, in the language of occult philosophy and Western esotericism, this is the lowest order of the hierarchical realms. What the Manitoba Ledge is about, what the City Beautiful movement and the early speculation wasn't simply dealing with the lowest order disincarnate spirits, but actually tapping into the super celestial world, the divine kingdom, the realm of the original deities. Now, because that project was subverted, and I can tell you why in the Manitoba Legislative Building, how it was subverted, Winnipeg no longer became a gateway for these higher ethical, spiritual, divine realms, but actually still, as it is a portal, only a translator, a medium of this low realm of ghosts. The largest sightings of ghosts in Canada, it's concentrated in Winnipeg. In
Jesus.
Fact, between a triangle of three historic buildings. One is the Manitoba Legislative Building. The other is the Hotel Fort Garry. And the third is a building that has only operated as one purpose. Every other purpose has failed as a business enterprise, which is the Masonic Hall on Donald. Now, those buildings form an almost perfect equilateral triangle. You can look it up, Google map it, do whatever. That's for somebody else to research. I like to drop these seeds and allow other people to go and explore those domains. But so you have this kind of triumvirate of historic buildings that emanate the disincarnate ghostly world. But if it was intended to be this higher ethical portal, it is still could be a kind of talisman for higher order, which is, I think, what the early speculators believed of Winnipeg and what I'm certain that Jim and Jake are trying to bring to life, is not this kind of low order mythology, Guy Madden, Archangel Michael, Satan thing, but higher order destiny. And that ties into the indigenous prophecy of the Anishinaabe people of this land.
Go on with that, please. I was going to ask you about that next anyways. I mean, what is the indigenous the implications as far as what their mythology is about that land?
Okay, well, first of all, it would not be a mythology, and then that would be constructed as a pejorative. The idea is, and you have to properly appreciate this, is that as there is no sacred text, a canon, in Native American culture and knowledge systems, their relationship with the Great Spirit, the Divine, is determined by ceremony and prophecy and dreams. So because these things are still alive, the current dream prophecy that has been rediscussed and it's beginning to gain a great deal of worldly traction is the following, that it is from the heart of America, what they call Turtle Island, or the center of not really Winnipeg, but Manitoba, the sacred site, the truth would be revealed. That great Anishinaabe prophecy of our age. And an eighth fire was lit and documented in context to this, that the elders had been speaking about that it was going to be here that an ecumenical world apotheosis would occur, meaning that all faiths, all cultures, all knowledge would be reconstituted, would be re-understood from the heart of Winnipeg, and that this would be led by the Anishinaabe, the least among of voices on the earth, meaning just the indigenous people. They don't really have a powerful voice, whether in politics or government or whatnot, but they do in the area of dreams. Now, it's probably here where the Canadian Museum of Human Rights has a particularly potent voice in giving them an opportunity to speak. But there's been a real revival, a huge revival of Indigenous knowledge systems and ceremonies that have been conducted in Winnipeg, centered on this prophetic idea that a new beginning was going to happen, and it was going to happen from here. Now, we have one elder that has traveled to various parts of the world, and he's been and he's a good friend of mine, and he's been telling me that he's been chatting with Indigenous leaders as far as, you know, Siberia, elsewhere, and Greenland, and they're saying, we know and have heard the voice of the center of the call, and we also believe that it is from Manitoba that this new truth would be revealed.
Wow. What if I told you that I was having dreams about Winnipeg? What would you say about that?
I have no idea. Now, for in that, I do you have to understand, I am firmly affixed to history. I need textual documentation, not veer off into these other domains, which, you know, to me is just as exciting. But you need to have a kind of a guide there as well. So,
Okay. What if I told you that not only I was dreaming about Winnipeg, that multiple individuals were dreaming about Winnipeg? Okay. So, this is making my head hurt just a little bit. What you're saying is that there's
we've come at this from the legendary side. That's how we approach this. There was the historical view where Winnipeg didn't live up to its promise, but on the legendary spiritual side, the city is...
It's still... Also, that's my point, is that instead of being this medium for the super celestial divine world, it is a medium of disincarnate spirits and other psychical phenomena. That's low grade. That's if you one of the things that my body of research looks at, which is different than, say, the history of religion, is Hermetic philosophy. Now, Hermes is a central figure in the mythology of Winnipeg because he crowns the dome of the Manitoba Legislative Building, and it is to the credit of Hermes, the interlocutor of all of this occult philosophy, going back all the way to Alexandria in Egypt, is that Hermes is the way shower of this subterranean body of knowledge. Now, in Hermetic philosophy, the idea is that the world, the entire universe, is a series and theater of mirrors, and that everything is connected to everything else. This is why I've been telling Jim and Jake, I was like, you guys are the last bastion of real Hermetic philosophers in this sense. The cornerstone of Hermetic philosophy rests on four interrelated principles. One, that the universe is alive. Nature is a pulsing being, alive and readable. That the signs of nature are all there, ready to be decoded and read. And it's up to us, having this divine Hermetic spark in us, the one thing that connects us to the higher realms, our intellect, that we're meant to peer into and decode this theater of messages from nature. The other is that we have this ability to do this, and it's impressive. It is our spiritual duty to do that. And so when everything is connected to everything else, it's all a series of fractals, and this goes back thousands of years. This is not some new age, you know, parlance, bogus discourse. This is ancient Hermetic philosophy. So what they're doing is actually in that series of you know, synchro mystical connections, they're actually doing a kind of not kind of, but very much doing Hermetic philosophy. They're just following to, you know, a pretty high degree. So if through doing that, that takes them back to the early history of Winnipeg. The early history of Winnipeg is connected to Hermes. There's a really interesting story there.
Yes, I see what you're saying. What do you also feel that it's your duty to carry on this torch of spiritual advancement as far as Manitoba goes? Are you trying to do anything yourself to continue its...
Well, I mean, yes.
I don't want to put you into a difficult spot here or anything. I'm just curious.
No, not at all. One thing that I was interested in doing for a time, and there's a possibility this could go forward, is to me, the reason that you have hotbeds of Hermetic Renaissance is because these are places that are centers of learning. For instance, Florence in the 15th century, which was the birthplace of the Renaissance, is because they had a Platonic Academy that recovered all this lost knowledge that had which the entire Renaissance mind was hoping to recover from the ancient world. Take Alexandria in the 3rd century AD, where the Library of Alexandria was. It wouldn't have been this center of great learning and world discourse from, you know, Jews, Christians, Gnostics, and countless other different groups had they not had a library. So being somebody who is a bibliophile and interested in textual knowledge, one thing that I was hoping to do and still hope can happen is when I did my degree at the University of Amsterdam, there is a library there. It's a private library. It's called the J.R. Rittman Library, or the Bibliotheca Philosophica Hermetica. It is the largest library of Hermetic writings on earth. It's about 60,000 volumes, pristine volumes that are owned privately, donated to the state. So anybody could freely look at them. So presently, the Library of Alexandria is in Amsterdam. Now, due to back taxes and several other things, and I'd spent two years of my life in Amsterdam, basically living, eating, and sleeping out of that library, an amazing resource, is that a number of years ago, due to back taxes, the government was going to seize all of those remaining books and sell them by auction on Sotheby's, Christie's, and countless other sites to basically recover these back taxes. And the entire scholarly community of professors in Western esotericism, mostly in Europe, tried to rescue. Some of those volumes have been sold and lost, and one proposition that I made, hoping that the University of Winnipeg would side with me on this, is that we should recover those works and bring them to Winnipeg. And not only bring them to Winnipeg, but this is where I think the best location for them would be to house them in a new center of Hermetic studies, which would be the old Masonic Hall, which is this site that has been, I mean, look it up, rampant with ghost sightings. Like, of all buildings in Canada, this place that the most number of sightings, every business that has been in there has failed. And I think it's because it was to be a diner. It was intended to be something else. So it's large enough, and Jim and I looked at it, actually, and we were thinking of doing it as jointly a center of Hermetic studies and also a center of study of ayahuasca, which I'm sure you're quite familiar with, having discussions with him. So one thing I would do is recover these books, bring them to Winnipeg, and create this world center of Hermetic study that would stay firmly here. And if we had that, then, to me, that would be a project exploring.
Wow. That's asking for it. Ayahuasca ghost and Hermetic text. What would you call
this
place?
So is that what you're currently working on? Is that where your interests are right now, this center and perhaps bringing books there? Or do you have any other projects? We're just about out of time. Is there anything we can plug for you?
Yeah, there are two things going on. One is I'm consulting with the Canadian Museum of Human Rights and acting, and what I'd like to do there, which is, I think, which would be cool, because then that would be two buildings in the same city that was doing the same thing, which was to create a kind of moral spiritual apotheosis, which is what the Manitoba Ledge does, is that I'm working with them to hopefully create a curatorial experience through the museum, so that you're actually being initiated in higher knowledge without actually knowing about it. So you could walk through, you could see these exhibits in the museum, and, you know, walk, you know, la-di-da through the history of human rights, but not knowing that the entire time you're being initiated into higher thought. So, and I'm working with First Nations roundtable group in seeing how we can do that. So that's the current project. And yeah, so that's it. Sorry, we ran out of time.
No. We still have about 5 or 6 minutes, but I'm glad that we got pretty much everything that I was shooting for in that little so far. But what about the, if you would like to speak about the, I think it's called the Manitoba Abbey, is that correct?
I don't know.
The alignment, I get them all mixed up, please forgive me, but the seat of God, the throne of God, the indigenous.
Yeah, maybe, see, that's something that's, all our stuff comes filtered through blog posts from Jim and Jake, and they're weaving pop culture in with sacred locations. But so Turtle Island, and then I think it's pronounced Manitoba-abi.
Manitoba-abi.
It's Manitouape. Now,
Manitouape.
Abreast of the latest kind of profusions and from Jim and Jake. So, and I follow the blog site, so you're going to have to flesh it out for me.
So the
prophecy is coming from Turtle Island, and that's not in Winnipeg, but a couple hours in the distance?
From Winnipeg, it's about, I'd say 90 minutes away. And it is the largest, oldest, and least documented petriform site in North America. That is demonstrable. It is a 9-acre site that has a number of different rock formations, which we symbolically do not know what they mean. Perhaps with Juan's help, we could find out what they mean. They went under a great deal of anthropological research about 20 years ago by Dr. Jack Steinbring, who was the head of the anthropology university, and he studied it. And in fact, I was in a unique position to petition the president of the University of Winnipeg to say, we have this body of work. It's sealed in a chest in his former office at the University of Winnipeg. We need to look at that and see what he thought. And according to his idea is that, this site, Manitouape, with all these petriforms, was actually a kind of star map, that what they were recording in these formations was different, important, propitious, celestial phenomena. And I think, a very reasonable hypothesis, but more research needs to be done there. And that's the site to which Jim has returned many times. And that is also the site where Maestro Juan Flores, who's presently in Winnipeg, as I understand, kissed the ground, shield, and felt that it was a pilgrimage back to where his and all other Indigenous people first arrived.
So after all of these texts, what do you think? I mean, is the most important thing people need to know about Winnipeg?
I think if there's anything you need to do is to follow the signs, wherever those lead you. To me, the greatest journey is the interior Gnostic one. And to me, it's been one that I've used not only with text, but also with ceremony, to then see where I came from individually, personally, not Moses, not some other thing outside there, but my own personal Gnostic journey. How does one do that? I think texts help, but Also, you need to go through interior visions, knowledge, and dreams, and I try marrying both. Now, if your dreams are taking you to Winnipeg, then I would follow those dreams.
That's what I needed right there. Okay. It's just, it's bizarre to me. There's a lot of signs just in the ones that you've said to us. I mean, there's Freemasonic signs here. There's indigenous, multiple indigenous signs that lead to this place, the spirituality and so forth that came at the turn of the century. I mean, there is just, it's kind of, that's like a big pot of craziness, but at the same time, it's intriguing.
Well, yeah. Have you been yet?
No, sir. I believe Doug has actually been to Winnipeg, but I myself haven't, because it's a pretty stout plane ticket from outside of Canada.
I hear you.
But now I guess that before it seems like it was a hub for trains. And I mean, you guys have this new airport that's just been developed.
Yep.
So perhaps it shall be a little bit easier, or who knows what the future holds. But however, that's pretty much all the time that we have for the initial 42 minutes. If it's okay, perhaps you would like to talk for a little bit longer?
No, I think we got quite a mouthful, and I have to apologize for the multiple monologues, which probably took us way off the beaten track, but that's the game.
I think the multiple monologues were great. We definitely got a nice taste of the character of Winnipeg, the legendary side as well as the historical side. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was, I have to say, as interviews go, and I've done many, this was a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Well, wonderful. So you began our talk with the question of why are we obsessed with Winnipeg? And so that's a good question.
Well,
we have some friends who are really convincing. They're saying that it's pretty special, and I'd probably agree with them. So thank you for sharing.
Surface, it's completely unimpressive.
As Doug said, he said, "Why Winnipeg? It's so not sexy." Is what he said.
Think about it, Bethlehem, the house of bread. This is the reason that Herod said, "Surely no king is to be born there." It's Bethlehem, the dung heap of Judea.
Thank you so much, Mr. Alvo, and have a wonderful day, good sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.